Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are really cutting through the noise on a topic that, well, it's everywhere in longevity circles.
It really is.
We're talking about injectable peptides, specifically growth hormone secretagogues. If you're into performance or healthy aging, you've definitely heard the names CJC-1295 Epamorelin.
Oh, for sure. The buzz is, it's pretty intense.
Right. It suggests everything from, you know, amazing sleep to almost miraculous recovery.
And that hype is exactly why we need to do this. Our mission today is just clarity, data, not marketing.
So let's start with what they're not.
Yes. Let's get this straight from the beginning. These are not cosmetic anti-aging treatments. They don't, you know, directly fill in a wrinkle. They work way upstream.
That's true.
They're influencing the endocrine signaling pathways. Basically, the messages that tell your body to release its own growth hormone.
Okay, so this deep dive is your intellectual shortcut. We're going to unpack what these compounds are, how they work at the receptor level, and most importantly, what the human data actually says they can do for you.
Versus what the internet promises. And before we jump in, a quick thank you to InfinityPeptide.com for supporting this deep dive. They're really committed to advancing research and educational clarity in this space.
All right, so let's start with the big question. Why the huge focus on growth hormone, on GH, when we talk about aging?
Well, because GH is just foundational. It's critical for for almost every system involved in just being physically robust and recovering.
Okay, like what specifically?
Think about protein synthesis. You need that for muscle maintenance, especially as you get older. It's also deep into fat metabolism, helping your body use fat for fuel instead of just storing it.
And insulin sensitivity, right?
It ties right into that.
Yeah.
And beyond metabolism, it's vital for bone density, for tissue repair. I mean, everything from a small cut to recovering from a heavy workout.
And sleep. I hear that one a lot.
It fundamentally shapes your sleep. It modulates your sleep architecture, making sure you get enough of that deep, slow-wave sleep where all the real cellular repair happens.
Which brings us to the problem. The reason these secretagogues even exist. The clock.
Right. The body's ability to secrete GH. It peaks when we're young, and then it just starts a steady decline.
How steady are we talking?
Starting in early adulthood, GH secretion drops by roughly 1% to 2% every single year. This isn't just a theory. It's a defined biological process called somatopause.
And when that GH production starts to slow down, you feel it.
You absolutely do. The physical consequences correlate almost perfectly with what we just call getting older. You start losing lean muscle.
Sarcopenia.
Exactly. You accumulate more visceral fat, that stubborn stuff. Your recovery capacity just plummets. Minor injuries take forever to heal. Your sleep quality degrades. It's a feedback loop.
So the whole goal here isn't to inject the hormone itself, which, you know, comes with a lot of baggage.
A lot of baggage and regulatory issues, yeah.
The idea is to just nudge the body to turn its own production back up.
That is the absolute key distinction. You are not injecting the final hormone. These are signaling molecules. They just encourage your own pituitary gland to release its own GH.
So the release itself is more natural.
Much more. It's pulsatile. It comes out in these bursts, which mimics the physiological pattern of a younger person. And that's thought to be a lot safer and more effective than just a constant flatline level of synthetic GH.
Okay, let's get into the specifics then. Let's start with the big one, CJC-1295. What's the mechanism here?
So CJC-1295 is a synthetic analog of GHRH.
Growth hormone releasing hormone.
Right. GHRH is basically the master switch in your brain that tells the pituitary, okay, time to release some GH. CJC-1295 just mimics that signal perfectly. It locks onto the GHRH receptors and stimulates the gland to release its stored growth hormone.
And when that GH gets released, it starts a chain reaction, right? It's not just a local effect.
Not at all. That GH travels primarily to the liver, and that's where it triggers the production of IGF-1.
Insulin-like growth factor 1.
Yes. And IGF-1 is really the main mediator of GH's growth and repair effects system-wide. So CJC-1295 kicks off that whole cascade.
This is where it gets a little tricky, though, because you see two versions. CJC-1295 with DACE and without DACE. And that DACE part seems to change everything.
It changes the entire function and dosing schedule.
Yeah.
DADE stands for drug affinity complex.
Okay.
If you use the version without DH, its half-life is incredibly short, maybe 30 minutes. So think of it as a quick, sharp pulse. It's very physiological, but you'd have to inject it constantly to keep the effect going.
Which is not ideal for a long-term strategy. So how does DACE fix that?
The DACE component lets the peptide bind to albumin, a really common protein in your blood. This binding acts like a like a protective shield, a slow-release reservoir for the peptide.
So it extends the half-life.
Dramatically.
Yeah.
It results in a sustained elevation of both GH and IGF-1, which is what the clinical trials really looked at.
So what did those big, double-blind, placebo-controlled human studies find with that long-acting DACE version?
The results are pretty compelling, pharmacologically. They showed CJC-1295 could increase peak GH levels by anywhere from 2 to 10-fold.
2 to 10-fold is a huge range.
It is. And just as importantly, it kept IGF-1 levels elevated for up to 6 days after just one injection. And it was generally well tolerated.
Okay, here's the critical question then. If the goal is mimicking youthful physiology, is a 10-fold pharmacological spike really physiological anymore?
That's a fantastic point. It really gets at the heart of signaling versus, you know, just flooding the system.
Right.
But what was so interesting in the studies, and this is a major selling point for this approach, is that even with IGF-1 way up, the body's natural GH pulsatility was not suppressed.
Oh, okay. So the pituitary could still respond to its own signals.
Exactly. It distinguishes it from direct exogenous GH therapy, which just shuts your own production down completely.
So the anti-aging relevance isn't about looking younger tomorrow. It's about setting a healthier hormonal foundation inside.
Precisely. The benefits are all secondary to that endocrine shift. And we have to be clear, there is no direct clinical evidence that CJC-1295 by itself reverses wrinkles, but
if you improve tissue turnover, recovery, sleep.
Over months, yes, you may see secondary benefits. Better skin health, better body composition. You're optimizing the engine.
So if CJC-1295 is the GH arch pathway, what about upamorlin? This is the one you always see paired with it.
Right, because upamorlin hits a completely different receptor system. It's a ghrelin receptor agonist.
Ghrelin. That's the hunger hormone, isn't it?
Most people know it as that, yes, but it's also a very potent GH secretagogue. So upamorlin stimulates GH release by binding to the UT. It's called the growth hormone secretagogue receptor, or GHSR.
And why this one? I know there are older versions. It comes down to selectivity, right?
Selectivity is the whole game. The earlier compounds that hit that GHSR were messy, promiscuous. They bound to other receptors and caused a lot of side effects. Upamorlin is much more targeted.
So what are you avoiding by using upamorlin?
You're minimizing the spike in cortisol, the big stress hormone. You're minimizing the elevation in prolactin. And maybe the most important thing for anyone using this for wellness.
The hunger.
It does not significantly increase appetite, which is a world away from its predecessors.
That's huge. No hunger, no cortisol spike. That makes it much more viable for long-term use.
Okay, so synergy. Why combine them? Two different pathways, GHRH and GHSR.
Because the combination is designed to create the most robust, youthful GH pulse possible. When you signal the pituitary from two different directions at the same time,
you get a bigger response.
A much bigger, synergistic GH release. It's like a 1-2 punch. The two signals amplify each other far beyond what either could do alone.
A wider amplitude pulse.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. And the clinical data backs that up.
It does. Human studies confirm the synergy. They showed that dose-dependent increase in GH, but still with a great safety profile. No significant elevation of those undesirable stress markers.
Okay, let's quickly touch on those older generations then to give some context.
Yeah.
GHRP2 and GHRP6, what were the big trade-offs there?
Well, they were pioneers. And they're very potent GH stimulators because they also hit that ghrelin receptor. But they were the definition of less selective.
So they came with baggage, a lot of baggage. GHRP6 especially is infamous for causing just massive uncomfortable spikes in appetite. It really hammers the hunger-related ghrelin receptors.
And both of them hit cortisol and prolactin harder than upamorlin?
Much harder. So if you're trying to manage stress and stay lean, these older compounds are actively working against you, even while they're boosting your GH. That's why they're not really favored in modern longevity protocols.
A lot of the initial excitement for all of these peptides, it came from preclinical data, right? Cell and animal studies. What did that research show?
The early lab models, they gave us strong biological plausibility. You saw amazing things. Enhanced wound healing, improved collagen synthesis, though that was mostly indirect through IGF-1, and activation of muscle satellite cells, which are key for repair.
So if a compound can improve collagen synthesis in a lab, why isn't it a miracle wrinkle cure in humans?
Because the translation from a petri dish or even a mouse to complex human physiology is just.
Yeah.
It's never one-to-one. It's highly inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the crucial takeaway here. The data supports the idea that these peptides support aging physiology. They help restore signaling. But the translation to visible, dramatic, anti-aging effects in people, it's just not established.
Okay, so let's put this all together. Let's synthesize this. For you, the listener, who might be considering this, what's the real summary of benefits versus the limitations?
Let's be really clear. What they may do, they may support the preservation of lean tissue, which is huge. They may significantly improve recovery from exercise. They may deepen your sleep architecture. And over time, that may lead to better metabolic efficiency and, indirectly, better skin quality.
And just as important, what do they not do? Let's draw the hard lines.
They absolutely do not replace targeted aesthetic treatments. This is not a substitute for a laser or a filler. There is zero evidence they reverse aging or extend human lifespan. That is pure speculation. And critically, they do not work in a vacuum. They don't replace lifestyle.
That clinical context is so important. Medically and legally, where do these compounds actually sit?
They were not FDA approved for anti-aging or wellness. That means any use is off-label. It has to come from a specialized compounding pharmacy, and it requires physician supervision.
And you should never, ever self-administer this stuff without a doctor.
Absolutely not. Medical oversight is non-negotiable.
And even with a doctor, it's not a standalone decision. You have to look at your whole health picture.
100%. Peptide therapy is one lever. It has to be evaluated alongside your baseline labs, your sleep data, your nutrition, your resistance training. Injecting a powerful signal into a system that's broken by poor lifestyle is just, it's a waste.
So the best way to frame GH secretagogues is as systemic support tools. They're not miracles. They're an ingredient in a much larger recipe for health.
That is the most responsible way to see them, yes.
Yeah.
You're supporting healthy physiology by helping to restore a function, that pulsatile GH release, that time naturally wears down.
And this brings us right back to where we started, that intersection of the hormone and the lifestyle. Since the whole goal here is to optimize the body's natural pulsatile release of GH, and since we know these peptides have to be paired with things like resistance training and deep sleep.
Which are the two most powerful natural ways to boost GH anyway.
Exactly. So here's the provocative thought we want to leave you with. How much of the perceived benefit of these systemic support tools is actually just contingent on the rigorous optimization of those other variables? The sleep, the exercise, the things that are driving the system toward health anyway. Is the peptide the real accelerator, or is it just the expensive passenger in a car that was already heading in the right direction? That's something for you to mull over.
A powerful question to end on.
We appreciate you joining us for this deep dive into the real data behind growth hormone secretagogues.